What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Jesse Strauss.
In 2023, U.S. police killed 1,161 people, according to the Washington Post. That's the highest number on record, and already in 2024, we're on pace for an even higher number, with almost 600 police killings already counted by the Washington Post. It's very possible that these numbers are not actually increasing, but rather, we're just getting more of the horrific killings by cops accounted for in national counts. After all, before independent journalist accounting, it was found that FBI logged less than half of police killings nationally. For most of these police killings, we don't even know the names of those no longer with us. There were no marches, rallies, rebellions, or hashtags for most of them as their families grieve on their own. Police killings are just a tip of an egregious iceberg of transgressions against our communities. Law enforcement served as a military occupying army in our communities and neighborhoods. They racially profile, assault, and put our folks in cages. If we don't know what's happening, then we can't fight back. We can't adequately organize a response. So every week on Law and Disorder, we kick off our Thursday with a roundup of news related to state violence. We hope this segment serves to expose, agitate, and build. This is the State Terror Roundup for the week of July 8th, 2024. On Monday, the LA Times published an investigation called Bringing a Gun to a Knife Fight, documenting Los Angeles police killings of people in mental health crises who are carrying knives. The Times analysis of LAPD data shows that there have been more shootings this year than in all of 2022 in these types of incidents. The department is on pace to eclipse last year's total of 11. In the first half of 2024, officers shot six people who were holding a sharp object while experiencing a behavioral or mental health crisis, a designation that includes those believed to be suicidal or under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Four were killed. There have been 17 police shootings this year, including cases involving edged weapons. This, again, all in Los Angeles. Since 2018, the Los Angeles Times analysis found officers have opened fire in similar circumstances at least 56 times, killing 35 people and injuring 19 others. According to their own rules, the LAPD has adopted guidelines that prioritize de-escalation techniques and the use of quote-unquote less lethal alternatives to deadly force. Shootings of people wielding sharp objects were more likely to end with someone being killed than even confrontations involving suspects armed with guns, which ended in a death in less than a third of the cases. The edged weapon cases resulted in fatalities more than 60% of the time, including one innocent bystander. Of the 56 edged weapon cases, police officials deemed the shootings out of policy, meaning they should not have occurred under department standards, eight times. In two cases, officers somehow accidentally shot the victims of knife assaults while trying to save their lives. It's worthwhile to note that Los Angeles has a program called the System-Wide Mental Assessment Response Team, or SMART, which pairs cops with county mental health clinicians. However, the program isn't funded well enough to get these SMART teams to the scene of most of the incidents in a timely way. The LA Times report quotes a former police commissioner suggesting that SMART is an inefficient program and therefore we shouldn't expect them to be useful. Rather, we should expect the police to take care of these issues. I'll respond. Police continuing to kill people in mental health crisis shows that they are inefficient and unreliable. What could it look like to divert the funds that empower these police killings to pay for the already established SMART program to be more quick and effective? Just an idea. Source, the LA Times. While we're on the topic of cops responding to mental health crises with guns, just this past Saturday morning, a San Diego officer fatally shot a man in his 20s in La Jolla. Around 7 a.m., multiple people reported the man to police for walking in the street with a knife. When they arrived, police found the man next to a vehicle that was stopped in the road. As the officers approached, sheriff's officials said the man walked toward police with a knife. Note, there is no allegation that this man attacked police. The man was shot by an officer, brought to a hospital, where he died. Again, perhaps a gun is not the tool to bring to a knife fight. Maybe a social worker who is well-resourced could have been called to a scene where no one had reported any attacks. Source, the San Diego Union-Tribune. In these situations where cops kill people in mental health crisis, we can generally expect our criminal legal system to let the shooters skate. At the end of last week, a federal judge dismissed an excessive force civil rights claim arising out of an incident in which Massachusetts police fatally shot Michael Conlon, a mentally disturbed man who was suspected of involvement in what police have called an armed robbery. The incident took place in early 2021. Michael Conlon allegedly walked into the candy store just below his own apartment while carrying a knife. The candy store owner, nervous, called the police. After officers arrived and threatened Michael, he allegedly picked up a knife, held it to his own neck, threatening to kill himself. After he set the knife down, an officer pointed a beanbag gun at the man and tried to shoot, but the beanbag gun misfired. So picture this, a man in mental health crisis after putting down a knife and seeing an unidentified gun pointing at him, watching a cop pull the trigger. So Michael Conlon picked back up his knife and moved toward the officers in a context where he perhaps already thought they were trying to kill him. Well, the cop's next move was indeed to shoot him, this time with live fire, killing him. Perhaps the most shocking portion of this story is that the police actually called a mental health expert who had already arrived at the scene before cops shot Michael Conlon. Somehow, the cops themselves chose to not let the mental health practitioner into the building due to what they called safety concerns, instead causing death themselves. So again, late last week, a judge dismissed the case by Michael Conlon's parents, Robert and Betsy, who were trying to sue the city of Newton, Massachusetts, and the five of its officers who were involved in killing their son. It's a wild ride to start a police interaction with a person holding a knife to their own neck, threatening to end their own life, only to have their life ended by police bullets, while a mental health expert who was called to deal with this exact situation was locked outside. Sources, the Boston Globe, and Massachusetts Lawyers Weekly. In Delaware, a judge decided on Tuesday to allow a case to move forward against police in which Raymond Rooks contends that the police used excessive force in shooting his 51-year-old sister, Kelly Rooks, and that they violated her rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Federal Rehabilitation Act. The lawsuit accuses Trooper Dean Johnson of using excessive force in shooting Rooks. It also claims two other troopers on the scene failed to intervene to prevent Johnson from shooting her. The complaint also seeks to hold Delaware State Police and its executive staff liable for the actions of the officers, claiming the police agency has failed to properly train officers on how to deal with emotionally disturbed people. The attorney representing Kelly Rooks' brother argued in court that the troopers who killed Kelly knew she was mentally unstable, given several previous interactions they had had with her in the days leading up to the shooting. Instead of trying to de-escalate the situation, however, the troopers were angry, hostile, and aggressive when they arrived. The lawyer said, quote, "It was never a call for police. It was a call for medical help." According to the complaint, Rooks suffered from bipolar disorder, and an increase in the dosage of lithium she was taking shortly before the shooting was making her, quote, "more depressed, more anxious, and more paranoid." We'll try to continue to follow this lawsuit here on Law & Disorder. Perhaps an outcome could offer a proactive alternative to mental health emergencies in Delaware. Source, The Associated Press. And lastly, in this devastating state terror roundup of people in mental health crises or with disabilities being killed by police, we return to the case of Ryan Gaynor, who on March 9th of this year was shot and killed by San Bernardino County Sheriff's deputies. Ryan was 15 years old and lived with autism. The incident began with a family dispute over chores. The arrival of deputies only escalated the situation, resulting in Ryan being shot while holding a gardening tool. Lawyers for the family will hold a press conference at 11 a.m. today, that's Thursday, July 11th, to address their legal path forward in federal court to find some accountability. A statement from the lawyers reads, quote, "Ryan needed understanding and patience, not hasty actions that ultimately cost him his life." We'll be following this story as well. This has been the State Terror Roundup for the week of July 8th, 2024. State Terror Roundup soundtrack provided by Coffee Brown, an Oakland-based musician, singer, and songwriter who has been a force in the Bay Area's hip-hop and soul scene since the early 1990s. You can check her out at kofybrown.com, and her website and socials are linked from our website. That's kpfa.org. You've been listening to Law & Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a world where all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law & Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is co-hosted by me, Jesse Strauss, and Kat Brooks, and produced by me as well. Our show theme music is from Steve Raskin. Feel free to hit us up about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media. That's at lawanddis, and subscribe wherever you stream podcasts by searching for Law & Disorder with Kat Brooks. You can also find our content live on KPFA Radio or streaming at kpfa.org in the 8 a.m. Pacific hour, Mondays through Thursdays. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by listeners, and if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.